Hey there, everybody. It is July 18th, 2013, and you are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line. Send that email on over to ken@thisshowissogay.com. Stroll on over to thisshowissogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little radio show that could. Of course, you can follow us on Twitter. I swear we're going to start using it. Maybe if you follow us, we'll start using it. I don't know. We'll get there. But go to Facebook because we're certainly using that and join the thousands of folks who are hanging out with us on Facebook. Type in This Show Is So Gay. Like us because we sure as heck like you. So much ground to cover on this week's episode. We must get started with our first guest. Noah Michelson is the editor of Gay Voices at the Huffington Post. He received his MFA in poetry as a fellow New York University Violet, and his poems have been featured in a ton of different publications. Before joining the Huffington Post, he served as the senior editor at Out Magazine, and he's also contributed to Detail, served as a commentator for the BBC, and now he's back here with us. Noah Michelson, welcome back to This Show Is
Thank
So
you.
Gay.
A pleasure to be here.
It's been over a year since you've been on the show.
Crazy. I can't believe that.
You have to believe it or we won't get anywhere with this interview.
Okay, I'm going to go with it.
So you guys are approaching year number two here at the Huffington Post Gay Voices.
We are, and it'll be October 3rd will be our second anniversary, which blows my mind. It's been a crazy 2 years, and it feels in some ways like we just started. In other ways, it feels like we've been doing this for decades. But it's been a really amazing ride so far.
So give us the thing that you didn't think was going to work and worked out so well.
You know, I was just a little bit nervous. Having a background in queer media, you know, coming from Out Magazine, I was a little bit nervous about how having a mainstream website like the Huffington Post, which has so many eyes on it every day, and the majority of those eyes are straight eyes, how that was going to work. And I was really nervous about having to sort of in some ways, you know, design the pieces that if you were a queer person and you were coming to the site, they made sense. But also if you're a straight person, they made sense as well. And that actually has worked out a lot better than I thought it would. Some things are just sort of self-explanatory. Other things we're learning that a lot of straight people are actually finding out more about the community than they would if they were just going to a site like The Advocate or other places like that. And I think, you know, queer media is really important, but it's also awesome when you can have a straight outlet like the Huffington Post covering queer topics because you're going to get a lot more people to start thinking about these issues.
Yeah. What's the thing that you tried that you're like, okay, this is going to be like gangbusters and maybe it didn't work out as well?
Ah, that's another good question. It's really hard to know day to day. We're obviously following the news cycle. So a lot of what we do has to do with what's going on in the world.
Yeah.
And reacting to that. You know, we also try and do other things that are a little bit more what we call evergreen. So they could work at any time. And so sometimes some of that content, I find people can be a little bit, more serious perhaps than I am. And I think I like to have fun. I like to do things that are a little bit trashy, and I use that word affectionately.
Of course.
You know, and I think sometimes, especially just because the LGBT community has been through so much and has been disenfranchised so often, not all of our readers are really interested in that. And so I'll get pushback from people when we do something like the 25 gayest Christmas songs, you know, something I think is really funny. And it's just kind of, you know, a little wink and a nod and not supposed to be taken so seriously. But I'll get a lot of comments from people who say, you know, that's not funny, that's offensive, and why aren't you covering real news? So sometimes those things don't work out as well as I want them to, but we keep doing them because a lot of people do enjoy them.
Yeah. Talk to me about the pace of what goes on there. I should say that since you and I last talked, you know, I've submitted a number of pieces, and it's been a great ride, and I've enjoyed it immensely. But I've also written things and felt like, oh gosh, this is out of date about 5 minutes after I wrote it.
It's so true. You know, we have a ton of people who write for us. We are bloggers, and you're one of them. And it can happen, you know, especially if there's an event like we had just a couple weeks ago with the Supreme Court hearing DOMA and Prop 8. We can suddenly be flooded with 50 or 100 blogs from people. There's only so much room on the site, and so we have to find a way to try and get to all of those. We have a blog team that handles all of our blogs, and they're amazing. But it's a lot of work. But at the same time, that's sort of the lifeblood of our site. We really want people to be writing for us, telling their personal stories, interacting with the community at large. And so we really struggle to make sure that things get out as timely as possible. But like you said, this has sort of been, the last 2 years have been incredible for LGBT news, you know, and the progress we're making is unheard of. And so it's a great thing, obviously, but it's also can be a tricky thing when you're doing LGBT news and culture to try and keep up with that and cover it from as many angles as possible.
Twice I've written a piece about a celebrity saying something bad and I questioned why they weren't apologizing. And then before I could post it, they apologized. And I'm like, damn it. Yeah. I mean, great, but that's annoying.
Right. Yeah. And you have to sometimes question how sincere those apologies are too.
Yeah.
That's sort of, you know, that's what we see now. Someone says something really dumb and they're sort of speaking from their heart, I believe. And then they get called on it and they have to walk it back almost immediately because it's just bad for business in a lot of ways. But those are important moments too, and I'm glad that you write about those things. And even if someone does apologize, it's still important to talk about, you know, what does this apology mean and why did they have to apologize, because we have a lot of work left to do as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. Back in February, I think it was, you went to a gathering of other LGBT journalists covering media. Where was the Huffington Post Gay Voices in that mix? Like, did everyone play well with you? How did that work out?
They did. It was in Philadelphia, and it's called the Haas Conference, and it's all the major players in the LGBT community, or most of them, come together for 2 days to talk about issues relating to the media. And I think that there are some in the media who don't love Huffington Post Gay Voices. Mm. And I say that because I think that they think that having a site like ours, which does have as much traffic as we have, then means that they're not going to get as much traffic, and so they think that we're stealing readers away from them. I personally believe that a couple things. One, I think that there's room for all of us to exist, and some of the work that the smaller sites are doing is work that we just can't do. And like we just talked about, there's so much news going on. I can only cover a certain number of things every day, and so it's important to have these other sites that are especially doing things on local levels and grassroots levels and are really doing the work that needs to be done. And I look to them, and I also feature them on the page. You know, I have people from other sites who send me content or even write for the site. And that's really exciting to me to have those kind of relationships. And at the same time, I just think that we can all sort of support each other and play well together. But some people don't feel that way, and some people really do take umbrage with the fact that we exist and worry what it means for queer media in the future. So
it's very interesting. We troll the LGBT news sites every week as we put together our news segment. And I will say that one of the sites that has traditionally been our go-to to gather together different LGBT news stories has all of a sudden, and maybe I'm not analyzing this right, I don't know, has all of a sudden most of their homepage are op-eds. And I'm kind of fascinated by that.
Right. I don't know exactly who you're talking about, but I can imagine who you're talking about. And I think that's true. I think the model that the Huffington Post put out there, and this was even before Gay Voices came along, this is just the model that the entire site follows, is that we really think that personal stories are important, and giving voice to people is one of our main concerns. I think other people have seen how well that's worked, and they definitely tried to get on that train as well. And I say the more the merrier to some extent. I still think we do it the best.
Yeah.
But I think if people can make it work for them, then that's great. They should do it.
Well, there are always two pieces to a Huffington Post story, and I've learned this in a great way and also in a really horrid way. You got the actual story, and then I don't know if you know this, Noah, there's this little thing called the comment section.
Oh, yeah.
Noah, how do you even approach wrapping your mind around the comments section?
The comments section are, you know, can be our best friend and our worst friend in some ways. On the one hand, I think on its best day, the comments section is amazing. I've seen things go on in the comments section where people say things like, you know, we just did a series on asexuality. And in some ways, I think that series was groundbreaking. I've never seen another site, much less a mainstream site, do an entire week worth of stories on a community like the asexual community. And we got comments in that comment section where people were saying, I didn't know that asexuals existed. This is who I am. I thought I had a disease, and you've literally changed my life now that I know there's a name for me. So when I see comments like that, that's why I do the job I do. At the same time, we have horrible comments from people. And a lot of times, you know, when you think about who's actually commenting on the internet, most of the time, that's what, 10% of the people who are reading the stories, maybe.
Right.
So you're getting sort of people who really like the attention, who really want to get into some of these thornier or trickier or even, you know, less savory conversations with other people, maybe are trolling for attention. And, you know, especially when we have stories about transgender individuals or things like that, it can get really ugly really quickly. And we really have to monitor them and make sure that people are having as intelligent of conversations as they can online. But you're right. No, it can be the best and the worst thing on the internet.
Do you think that the Gay Voices section breeds different types of comments or maybe certain commenters?
I do. You know, and I think there are I think the issues that we're dealing with every day are still really controversial and really taboo, and especially because, again, we're bringing in a lot of people who are not from the community and so who are reacting to these issues and don't have the background or the experience that someone who is from the community would have. So when you can sort of put all of that, the controversy, the taboo nature, and really different backgrounds all together in the same pot, it's just mayhem, you know? And like I said, the best things can come out of it because of that. And it's so unexpected and you just don't know what you're going to get. But at the same time, you can really get some really repugnant stuff happening.
And I've said this before on the show, that there is some encouragement on behalf of the Huffington Post to their bloggers to interact in the comment section. And I will be very upfront with you. I have not really found the right balance for that. Like, I either am just like, no, I'm not responding to this. Or, you know, after every comment, I'm like, you didn't read the piece.
Right. No, and there is a lot of that. You know, there's some people that I just know and I tell them when they sign up to blog, especially if they're dealing with an issue, like maybe it's the mother or the father of a young gay child or something like that. I say, you know what, I would just, if I were you, I wouldn't go into the comment section because I just don't think that this is something that's going to be useful to you. Other people like you and some others I know, they love to go in there after they've written a piece and they love to sort of battle it out with people or, you know, have a debate about issues. But I think it's always a personal thing, you know, and also it depends on what you wanted to get out of writing that blog. Were you looking to incite some kind of discussion or some kind of debate, or did you just want to tell your story and put it out there, you know? So it totally depends on how you're going to approach your own piece and other people's pieces.
I've learned a title is very important because it turns out some people comment just based on the title.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And the title
read
is
important the piece.
No matter what. Yeah. But you know, that's how also the way that media works now is so much of what we do is via social media. So if we're putting your story out there on Facebook or Twitter, you know, Twitter, I only have 140 characters. So your title has to really be clear, and it also should be in some ways provocative or let people pose a question or give them a reason to click on that Twitter link and read your entire piece, because our attention spans are so short now that if you don't hook someone immediately, a lot of people just aren't going to take the time. So the title is definitely the gateway to the entire piece.
Well, you mentioned traffic before. This is now giving you the platform for the definitive answer. Noah Michelson, how do you make a piece go viral?
Oh, it's such a tricky, tricky thing. And pieces that I thought would go super viral don't go viral, and pieces that I totally wrote off do go viral. You know, a lot of it is topic. We just put up a story today called Which of the Hunger Game Characters Might Be Gay? You put out something like that, that's probably going to go viral.
Yeah.
People really are going to click on that. They want to know. We had another piece last week about some parents of a young man who came out to them as gay, and they were a very Christian family. And they told him he had to choose between his sexuality and Jesus, basically. And it turned out to be a heartbreaking story, and he ended up dying of a drug overdose. But it's about, you know, what that did to their family. That went so viral, I can't even tell you.
Wow.
So a lot of times it's about the topic, and then a lot of times it's also, but like we were just talking about, it's about the title and the way that you package it and let people know exactly what they're going to get or not letting people know what they're going to get and letting them sort of stumble into it and giving them a reason to click on it to just important to be clear and to be personal. You want to be telling a personal story. You want something that people can relate to, or you want something that people can say, oh, I can't relate to that at all, but that's an incredible experience that I think other people would want to know about. And then they put it on their Facebook page or they tweet it. And so I think personal stories, we're seeing that just in general. You know, we talk about Senator Rob Portman from Ohio,
right,
who came out in favor of gay marriage after his son told him that he was gay. And that was the thing that it took to turn him to become an ally. And so I can't speak highly enough of how important personal stories really are today.
Sorry, I just had my moment of, oh, he's my senator now.
It's crazy. Exactly.
It's crazy. Yep. Well, you are not only an editor, but as we mentioned, you are a writer. Can we talk about a couple of your pieces?
Sure.
So you wrote three that just jumped out at me. You wrote one, of course, I just keep going back to it. Title right there, Why Is There No HuffPost Straight Voices? And you wrote in that piece, furthermore, I believe that even if we someday win and or granted fair, accurate, and widespread visibility, equal legal rights and protections, and a place at the table with our non-queer comrades, we will still have much to share, dispute, honor, and mull over amongst ourselves. Mm-hmm. There's a whole queer culture out there to talk about.
There is, and I think that people forget that. I think we so often get caught up in, and rightfully so, but get caught up in that search and that fight and that journey for rights and protections that we don't have yet. But those aren't the only things. We don't exist only in opposition to the mainstream. We exist as ourselves as well. And, you know, I was just thinking about, if you look at the Black community too, for all intents and purposes, the Black community was granted the same rights that everyone else was back in the 50s and 60s. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that there isn't still a Black culture or a Black community.
Indeed.
You know, and so even though I think we have a long way to go before we are going to be equals at the table, even if we do get there, I think that we're still going to have things that are uniquely queer to celebrate and to share and to write about.
Folks have to check out that piece because I love that you called out, you know, the folks who are clamoring with that ideology of, can't we just assimilate? Can't we be like everyone else? And, mm-hmm. and like you, I believe that I don't want to.
No, I'm happy to be queer.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to be a straight person and I don't want all the things that come with being straight. And it's an interesting time right now actually to think about that because we just think about what happened in the Supreme Court with DOMA and Prop 8 and what an incredible thing that was and how much there is to celebrate there. But at the same time, not every queer person wants to get married. Not every queer person wants to join the military or thinks that the military is even a good thing to aspire to want to be in. So, you know, when we get these victories with Don't Ask, Don't Tell and we get these victories with DOMA and Prop 8, yes, I think that we all should have the same rights on paper no matter what. But I think we should also be evaluating what it means to want to be married and what it means to want to be in the military and what that means about queer liberation. Yeah. And so I think that's really important.
You wrote a few months back about a brand new reason to be terrified of homosexuals. You wrote in that piece, quote, gay men are now proudly serving in the military in even closer quarters and under way more pressure than professional athletes without any problems. When a professional athlete finally comes out, the world will not come to a screeching halt. No one is going to start spontaneously vomiting hot blood or go hysterically blind. First of all, what vomiting hot blood? Where did that come from?
I don't know. That's one of my poetic images. In my mind, it's kind of a sick place. Most people probably don't want to venture there. So I don't know where that came from.
The comments section in that piece was a light.
Yeah. And I think it's true. We've seen, we're still waiting to see what happens, but Jason Collins came out obviously, in the NBA, and we're hearing rumors that there are going to be NFL players who are going to come out soon and the baseball as well. You know, whether or not we want to admit it, there are already gay athletes playing on all of these teams. And I think once they actually come out and do it publicly, I don't think the world will end. I think it'll be a really powerful, incredible thing. And I think the straight guys in the locker room just kind of have to buck up and you know, deal with it, basically.
Where is my professional gay male tennis player? I don't understand it.
Yeah, that's true, actually.
I don't understand it. That was, as you said, you know, the pieces that you just dash off, and I'm like, whatever, I just kind of want to get this out there. And then it goes crazy, and I'm like, wait a second, what? I didn't really spend enough time on this. It's weird.
Yeah.
Your interview with Amelia, the blogger and mom of The Young Gay Son, I just thought was an amazing set of questions, an amazing set of answers. But I finished reading that and thought that that interview actually affected you as well.
It did. Amelia, you know, she is the mother. Her son is now 8, and he came out to her last year. But he first sort of made his sexuality known when he was 6, and he was in love with one of the characters on Glee, and he called it his boyfriend. And so Amelia's been blogging for me since I started. She was actually, the first blog I put up on Gay Voices.
Wow.
And her journey and being able to take that journey with her has been incredible. And she's not only writing now about herself and her own family, she's now writing about all of queer America and what it means to be the mother of a queer child. And so to get to sort of sit down with her for a little bit and ask her some of these questions that I've been wondering about and have her respond, it was a very powerful, moving thing for me, and we've become friends, which is so funny to say since she lives in the middle of the country and right. You know, is anonymous, but she is an amazing person, and she's not a trained writer, and this is another thing I should, you know, we want everyone to be writing for the Huffington Post. Anyone has a story to tell, and so it doesn't matter that she has no background in writing. She's become an amazing writer over the last 2 years. And these are the stories that are shaping our country right now. And she's another prime example of things going viral. I mean, she'll write a piece oftentimes and it will get, you know, 100,000 likes on Facebook.
Yeah.
Because she really is talking about these issues that people care about, are thinking about, can relate to, and she's just such an important voice right now.
It was a really well done piece. I thought that was a great
yeah.
chat. That was a great
yeah,
chat.
Definitely.
Well, anybody who is friends with you on Facebook knows that one of the insights we get into you, we have this whole, I feel it's a column in itself, called Songs Before Bed.
Yeah, I love those.
I love those. And it just happens to be that, like, lately you've been hitting me pretty hard. You had the
really?
Tori Amos going, you had yeah. the Joan Osborne, who I am obsessed with Joan Osborne.
And she doesn't get enough credit. I think people just think of her as the woman who sang that song about
God.
God was one
yeah.
of us. Exactly. She has an incredible voice, and there are songs on that album. But yeah, when I am going to bed, I do sort of I'm listening to a song as I'm getting ready for bed, and I put that out there. And I've heard from a lot of people who say, oh, I love that song, or I haven't thought about that song, or, oh, I'd never heard that song. It's just fun for me. Music is a huge, huge love of mine. I used to joke that I probably spend more time with my headphones than I do any other person every day. It just helps get me through everything. And so it's a nice way for me to wind down, and I love that other people are enjoying it too.
Well, people often say it's commonly referred to in the media as the holy NYU triumvirate, which is Noah Michelson, Joan Osborne, and Ken Schneck. It's usually...
I have heard that, exactly. Yeah.
Hear it all the time. And I should say, because I'm going to give them a shout-out, even though I just moved from here, and this was such a funny confluence, Joan Osborne playing a concert in Wilmington, Vermont, which was one of the hardest towns hit by Hurricane Irene. And so Joan Osborne is doing a concert, and you guys can Google that and go get tickets. So
that's
very cool.
Super cool. I didn't know that.
I should tell you, and I feel like you'll just be so proud of me, so I'm excited to tell you and wait for the hook on this one. I just came out to my parents 2 weeks ago as a person living with tattoos.
Oh, you did?
18 years
wow.
with tattoos, and I just came out.
So they must be somewhere that they can't see them.
I have 11, well now 12 after last week, but 12
wow.
tattoos, but they are, you know, like I always wear long sleeves and stuff.
Right. So did they disown you?
This is the funniest bit. My mom is okay with it because she's in love with Adam Levine and he's a nice Jewish boy.
Thank God for Adam Levine, right?
I mean, really? This is what I was waiting for? The voice?
Right.
That's what was
right.
I was waiting to happen. So you are a tattoo aficionado.
I am. I only started 3 years ago. And
No way.
Yeah, it's crazy. Because actually the reason is that my parents were really against it. And so I, being the good boy that I am, I honored that. But I turned 32. My father passed away a couple years prior to that. And I just said to my mom, you know, it's time. It's time for me to start. And I always knew I wanted to be totally covered. And so I'm on a mission. I get about one a month now.
Wow.
And I have an incredible artist named Virginia Elwood, who's here in New York. And she and I just collaborate. I give her an idea, and she runs with it. And, yeah, I've spent way too much money and way too much time on it, but I love it. I actually have nightmares now where in my nightmare I don't have any tattoos. And I wake up in a cold sweat panicking, worried that I've lost my tattoos. That's how sick I am.
I just learned that the underside of your arm is really a sensitive place.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I'll have to say, though, the hardest place for me so far has been the rib cage. The rib cage is nuts, and I just got that done 2 months ago, I guess.
Well, let's do a little learning annex with Noah Michelson for all of our aspiring job seekers out there. You know, I work with college students. I'm sure you guys have college students running around there. And there is that push and pull as we're trying to advise them to go into careers, and maybe they do have visible tattoos.
Yeah.
What do we say to them about career trajectory?
I think, in some ways, I think it's beginning to be less and less of an issue in general, no matter where you are, especially if you're in a major city. Most places, a lot of places do not care as much. However, I will say that, no, it's definitely still an issue, and you have to think about the career that you want and where you're going. Part of the reason that I got the tattoos that I have, and I have a huge Tom of Finland on my forearm and my hands and my knuckles are all tattooed. I can't hide my tattoos. And part of that for me was a commitment to myself that I would never take a job that wouldn't let me be tattooed.
Yeah.
Which sounds kind of extreme, but it really was. But I do. I get interns in here. I had a school group in here a couple months ago, and the first question they all wanted was, how did you get a job with all your tattoos? And so I had to tell them, you know, think about it. If you want to be a banker or you want to be a lawyer, maybe, you know, getting your neck tattooed isn't the best idea.
Right.
But like you said, you know, you can get them in places that aren't visible, and you have a lot of room to play around. But I think that is a consideration because we're not there yet. It's not seen as totally acceptable, but I think a lot of places, there are several very tattooed people here at the Huffington Post, and more you're just seeing people getting it done. It's getting less and less of an eyebrow raiser.
Yeah, I will say that I interviewed for my new job during the winter, and tomorrow's my first day, and it's short sleeve summer, so we'll see how this goes.
More coming out for you.
Yes. You know? I need to sign the contract first, so that would be great.
Yeah. That's a great idea. Exactly.
Anything exciting coming up on Gay Voices that we should know about?
Gosh, I don't know. Nothing super exciting. Like I said, a lot of it is the news cycle, so we'll see what happens just day to day. And maybe some fun stuff for the summer. Well, we just did 20 queer books you should read at the beach on Saturday, which is kind of fun. They were all biographies and memoirs of a lot of different people that we love and felt like you could escape into their lives for a day when you're at the beach. We try and do things like that once in a while. Like I said earlier, we don't take ourselves too seriously all the time. So you definitely can count on us to get your important news.
Yeah.
But we also want to have people having a good time, and so there's a lot of that on the site as well.
If we stop covering the Westboro Baptist Church, though, will they go away? Because I'm seeing right there on the homepage, you know, they're picketing Corey Monteith. What a horrible, tragic death there. But, you know, there is that part of, I guess you have to cover everything because it's news, but I wish we could not cover them.
I understand that. I actually love the Westboro Baptist Church in a lot of ways, and I'm very dedicated to covering them. I think that they serve as a reflection of some of a large part of this country and what
Definitely.
They still think about. And I think that, you know, obviously they're the extreme version of that, but it's not unfair to say that there are a lot of people who still actively do not like queer people. And so to have someone like the Westboro Baptist Church serve as sort of a symbol or a beacon of that, it's we're able to point out how foolish it is and let people see just how despicable and, you know, ridiculous that kind of homophobia is. So we continue to cover them, and I know a lot of people get frustrated by that. I don't think they're going to go away no matter what. I especially love to cover the stories where it's people reacting to them.
Oh, like
You know, the Equality House that is now
across the street,
away from their church.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's painted rainbow. That's an amazing story. So I love to do things like that. Or when you hear about entire towns coming together to protest against them. You know, those are really, really great stories.
Wasn't the little girl selling lemonade or something?
She just sold lemonade. She raised like $20,000 for the Equality House. Yeah, it's amazing. Because I think people actively also want to have something to rally against. And the Westboro Church really provides that, you know?
Yeah. Well, what you guys are doing over there at the Gay Voices section is really just incredible. I mean, look, for 5 years now, we've been talking about the importance of that word voice and how there are so many different voices out there, and not to just have the one dominant narrative, because there's so many others that are not coming to light. And I think what you guys really do just so well is that voices we never would have heard before, you know, either in our walking daily lives or just out in mainstream media, you know, whatever it might be, you guys provide a forum for that, and it increases the dialogue and increases the understanding, and it's just invaluable.
Right. Oh, well, it's my pleasure, and I get to go to work every day and do something that I not only really believe in, but really like. So it's really, really great to hear you say that, and hopefully just more good stuff coming up.
There you go. Everybody strolling over to HuffingtonPost.com/gay-voices. You can get it right there in the all sections part. Noah Michelson, what an absolute treat.
Thanks, Ken. I'll talk to you soon.
Sit down on the corner, just a little climb. When I make my money, got to get my dime. Sit down with her baby when this full of trash. Bold as a street light, dark and sweet as hash. Went down in the hollow, leaving so soon. Oh, Saint Teresa, higher than the moon.
All right, folks, and we are back. Well, one of the joys of doing this show, first, is getting to talk to these incredible people. We just had Noah Michelson on, and what a great chat that was. And then there's this other really cool joy where we talk to folks, and then their names pop up in the news, and it's like, wait a second, what's going on? And so it is with our next guest and our next story coming up, Geeks Out. Hitting the news, Geeks Out, Jono and Patrick were on the show last year, and now they are all over the news with quite the inspired campaign that we are happy to support. Let me tip my hat on that one. Jono,
thank you.
Welcome back to The Show Is So Gay.
Thank you very, very much. I'm still so gay, and I'm so happy to be back.
I have to say, just for a disclaimer, I did not intentionally set out to only have NYU Violets on this week's episode.
It's hometown pride, man. Own it.
Love it. Love it. All right. Holy cow, do we have a lot to talk about. This is all about Orson Scott Card in the upcoming movie Ender's Game. And we did briefly cover weeks and weeks ago just a shout-out that, hey, Orson Scott Card, not perhaps the most gay-friendly chap on the market.
Definitely not. Definitely not. There are probably one or two others in the history of anti-gay sentiment who have made themselves more unwelcome at, you know, my local gay bar, but not too many.
Not too many.
Not too many who are running around right now as well.
Well, so let's trace this back. Let's do a little bit of an anatomy of action, as we like to do here. Where did a group of you sitting around saying, all right, we got to do something around this movie? Is that where this started?
Well, this started actually a long time ago, back in April of last year, in fact, when there was a lot of hubbub about just the fact of this movie. I wrote an editorial piece for geeksout.org about saying, don't see Ender's Game. And it was about then, and it remains now, even more than it is about what he has said and done to mark himself as a definite enemy of LGBT Americans and the full exercise of their civil rights. Besides all of that, Skip Ender's Game is about preventing our community's resources from furthering his goals with box office receipts. It's about making sure that our gay dollars do not get into his pockets and the pockets of the National Organization for Marriage. It's about us. It's not even about him as much. He's done what he's done. We're not going to change that. We're not going to expunge the record. We're not going to make him suddenly wake up and be a real person about it. That's done. That's not what we want. We want people to stay home. Yeah. We want him to make as little off of this movie as he possibly can because otherwise he's going to turn his brand new fortune off of box office tickets, off of toys, off of tie-ins, off of DVDs. He's going to turn that right around and buy 100 new billboards for anti-gay marriage laws in every state where it's still illegal. He's going to sponsor through the National Organization of Marriage more kill the gay laws in developing nations around the world.
Oh, yeah.
They may have conceded a moot point here in the United States, but it's certainly not moot in other places.
No.
You know, we don't need to give him our money. He's got a right to try to sell his movie or whatever, however much he wants to. We've got a right to decide we're not buying it.
But to be clear, he would indeed get a cut from box office sales.
He's a producer. He's a listed producer on the film. You would think that after all of this, the very first thing that Lionsgate would say, given all this, is, oh, no, he's not making a dime off of this. You would think that would be the first thing they said, because that would shut us up immediately. We're not taking money out of his hand. We can't erase the check they've already given him. But we'll make sure he does not get another penny. With a deal like this, they're trying to make this the new Hunger Games. It's insane to think that he does not have his eye on Stephenie Meyer money. You know what I'm saying?
Right, right. So but before Lionsgate issued their statement first, well, I mean, I know there was a lot of first, but first, Orson Scott Card issued a statement. And
he broke his silence, his notorious silence.
He basically, I'm not going to read his whole statement because I don't really want to give him that much time, but he said this has nothing to do with political issues, that Ender's Game has nothing to do with that. But let's read the end, his last statement there. Now it will be interesting to see whether the victorious proponents of gay marriage will show tolerance towards those who disagreed with them when the issue was still in dispute.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's really what's going to be interesting. Actually, no. I told a librarian friend of mine this. Tolerating the intolerant is what most of us do every day.
Right.
What's going to be really interesting out of this is how the intolerant act now that they're not winning anymore.
Right.
It's always the biggest bullies who squeal the loudest and the fastest.
Yeah.
So
he was not happy
really
with you.
Interesting. No, we're threatening his livelihood. He wants to make money here. That's why you make a movie. They want your money. Listeners, they want your money. That's why they make a movie. All you have to do is stay home. It's an inaction. We're not asking people to do anything. The natural state of man is not to be seeing a movie. This isn't water.
Yeah. Yeah. And then Lionsgate not only came out with their own statement, but then they said they're hosting an LGBT benefit premiere, which was, well, that was an interesting move.
Yeah. Good for them. That's terrific. It would be great. Geeks Out is very, very determined to make sure that Skip Ender's Game is a positive experience for the LGBT community, and if Lionsgate wants to participate in that by hosting a benefit and supporting either pro-marriage equality or gay rights organizations or foundations or what have them, details have not been released or anything, but that sounds great, that's great. It doesn't change the fact. It doesn't change the very simple arithmetic that the more movie tickets are sold, the more dollars Orson Scott Card gets.
Right. There's something very, let's say, irksome, though, about the studio saying, we're going to host a benefit premiere for the LGBT community using the content produced by the anti-gay man, the very content to which you are protesting.
Oh, that doesn't irk me that much. I mean, certainly this has nothing to do with the content. He could have written any book that they were trying to make a movie of. This is really about the dollars and keeping our gay dollars out of his pocket.
If you're protesting this film, the fact that they would then use that film to have a benefit premiere is a little bit odd.
It's a little, it seems like one of very few things that they could do, and certainly a generous and a proactive gesture. You know, you can wonder who's going to want to go to that and watch this movie after all this for a benefit. You know, it might turn into a wonderful thing.
I would have separated them.
Great. Yeah, maybe. but they're doing what they've got to do. I mean, Lionsgate's a movie studio. They made the calculation that movie studios always make and that people will line up for this, and they are protecting their investment. I don't not understand that. And we're not trying to say that Lionsgate has a history of evil things. They've gone out of their way to list their accomplishments toward the LGBT community, and nobody's trying to take that away from them.
Right.
This is about this.
And then I'm sure you were thinking, well, I'm sure that Dustin Lance Black is going to weigh in. And indeed he did.
Right? Who asked him? I guess the Times guy either reached out or something. The Times did a great job in also looking at the timeline of this. And, yeah, I wonder about, like, the why him, like, where that came from. But I wonder also about how engaged he thinks it is to buy a ticket to a movie versus to stand up and take a community action.
Right.
Like, I really question his definition of the word engagement in this context. I certainly don't want to attack the man for just this. It seems like a sort of weird blender, but maybe he just really wants to see Ender's Game, and that's fine. You know, if he just really wants to see Ender's Game, he can. He ought to wait for it on Netflix or get the DVD from his local library or something like that that won't put his money in our enemy's hands, but that's his decision.
Talk to me about the support that you're getting.
The support that we're getting is really the motivating force behind my fast talk here and the fact that we're really about to do a lot more with the Ender's Game. The response that we're getting is very positive in terms of petition signatures. It's very positive in terms of outreach on Facebook and through social media. There are conversations and, you know, trollish comments aplenty on our posts on our website, geeksout.org. But there are lots of brand new supporters, people who have found their way into this community and into the community of queer geeks and their friends and allies. And that's the community that this is really about. So if anybody finds their way to us, either Geeks Out the organization or us, the community, and takes a look around and sees that there are other people here like them, that this is, you know, a dynamic group of diverse people and makes some new friends or some connections, then that's wonderful. And I think that's something that's also happening, is that people are recognizing that this is a real community here. Sci-fi fans are LGBT allies, and the whole Venn diagram of the overlap, we're a force in the pop culture, we're a force in the marketplace, we're the same audience that turned The Hunger Games and Iron Man 3 and The Avengers and Man of Steel into gigantic blockbusters, and that's really what Orson Scott Card was hoping we would do in this case.
Yeah, not so.
Didn't work out so well for him.
Not so. No. Is there a part of you, now look, we are thrilled for you guys, and I just love seeing it every, I mean, even just seeing Dustin Lance Black made a statement about it. It was like, wait a second, what'd you just say, Dustin Lance Black? But then at the same time,
and
it was
Bendis,
also like,
Brian Michael Bendis, did you see that?
I did not see that.
Brian Michael Bendis on his Tumblr, somebody asked him about it, you know, some person that purported to be a conservative and asked him a question, and Brian Michael Bendis, without speaking for him, just go look for it, because he really outlined what's at stake in this. And again, so that I don't speak for him, I don't have his words in front of me, I don't want to claim that he stands for something that he doesn't, but he really looked at what is at stake in terms of what Orson Scott Card has said and done, and what he, as a married straight man, thinks about people being able to get married. And it's a really wonderful statement. It's very thoughtful. It's eloquent in the way that Brian Michael Bendis can be in his, you know, direct way. And even if it's not implicit support for Skip Ender's Game, we, the queer geeks who read his stuff and love it, really appreciate his support in terms of the issue at hand.
So given all that, is there also a part of you that's like, holy crap, look at all this attention?
I am peeing my chair, Ken. It is really, really difficult for me to keep good furniture after this week. Excuse me to the listeners. I'm not really peeing my chair. But
Geeks Out, now sponsored by IKEA. Just want to note that.
Hey, I have very nice wooden chairs. Thank you, guys. this is phenomenal in terms of the community standing up. We are very, very honored to be gaining this notice. We are really trying hard to make sure that the story, that we are not the story.
Right.
But yes, we love it. You know, we came together as a group because we were part of a community that we didn't think knew itself. And Patrick and I spoke about this last time. We really have spent the last couple of years very diligently and with fun events and good energy and great stuff. New and exciting things, really building up a community here in New York and in Dallas and Chicago, where we also have Geeks Out chapters, other cities around the country where we're getting a lot of support. And people realize that this is a lot of people are involved and answer these same descriptions. You know, we're a lot of people. And that feeling now is tripled, quadrupled, octupled because of the exposure for Skip Ender's Game, the coverage, the generally very positive coverage, and a lot of big-time mainstream media. You know, we really started to get traction once The Hollywood Reporter and Variety picked it up on the same day. You know, those are the two biggest Hollywood papers, and
yeah,
our names are right up in there. And again, it's not about us, but it's about what we're saying. You know, Orson Scott Card poisons this well. We're the ones saying, don't drink the water.
Yeah.
So it's great that people are listening to us because they're not going to drink his poison.
If you want something else to drink and watch this transition, this Saturday perhaps you could go to Bartini for Bar Trek.
Zang! Wow. Color me impressed. Color me impressed.
So just to highlight, you guys have tons of other things going on.
Yeah, our Bar Trek into Drunkness bar crawl across New York is this coming weekend, and the board members are deviously concocting all sorts of Federation and Klingon and Romulan themed challenges to carry our teams across the city from bar to bar, humiliating themselves in the name of the Prime Directive and having a good time. Yes, Geeks Out is and remains a group that is far more for things than we are against things.
Right.
This was an opportunity we saw to take a stand, to say, wait, here is someone who has done appreciable damage to our community, and now he's in our house asking for our money. And all you have to do is say, no, sir. That's all you have to do. And he gets less of what he wants.
Right.
Our enemies get less of what they need to continue to wage war on us.
Not to challenge you on that, but I would say that I would argue against the point that that's being against something. I think it's most certainly being for something.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
So, we got Linda Carter coming up on Fire Island. You guys,
so excited.
So excited. That sounds amazing.
Yes, we just got our tickets today. I am going to make sure that we get her a Strong Female Characters t-shirt and a photo in it. Oh, that's my big goal.
Nice. And what is the Geeks Out presence here in Ohio? What do I need to do now that I'm here?
It's you, man. Come on, get started. Find your friends. You got a bunch of dudes that you told, or ladies. Hey, I'm sorry. I just, you know, you're Ken. Your friends, the people with whom you talk comics or sci-fi or J.R.R. Tolkien or robots, get them together and go out to the bars one night. You've started a Geeks Out chapter.
Nice.
If anybody who can hear us is definitely interested in starting either a Geeks Out chapter, a group in their town where there is not one yet, or a Skip Ender's Game event in your city to give your friends and your community something positive to do on Friday, November 1st, instead of going to Ender's Game, please hit us up at info@geeksout.org. Look for Skip Ender's Game on Facebook. Sign the pledge at skipendersgame.com. You can join the community at geeksout.org. Anybody can register for a website membership and start soon to post events and a call to action of their very own.
Awesome.
You know, this is about us, so join in.
Can I tell you my new obsession?
Please.
It's been going on for a couple months, and I haven't come out with it yet, so I'm telling you first.
I am on the edge of my seat, like piece of seat.
Supernatural.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I am, yeah.
Are you a Jensen Ackles guy or a Jared Padalecki guy?
Without question. Without question, I'm a Jared Padalecki guy.
Oh, see, well, this is good, because you and I would not fight, because I'm a Jensen Ackles. I'm glad to hear it. There's no reason for us to ever be rivals.
And with that, the Ohio chapter of Geeks Out just officially kicked off.
Yeah.
Nice. Well,
off the air, probably.
You guys know that we love everything you're doing. I was thrilled to see you all attached to this action. I was more thrilled to see that it's getting attention. It's most certainly something that I support. So please keep persisting. This is most certainly for our community, and a really important voice to put out there, because it is our money that they're trying to get. And so
yes, sir,
that is one of the ways that we use our voices here, folks. So learn more and do what you can. Say hi to Patrick for us?
Will do, sir. He is going to San Diego Comic-Con to preach the good word.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
Yeah, look out, San Diego. but thank you so much, Ken, for continuing your great stuff out in the wilds of America, wherever the wind blows you, and we very much at Geeks Out appreciate your support for everything that we're doing and the community, as well as Skip Ender's game. So thank you.
Always, always. John, I'll keep fighting the good fight.
Rock and roll.
All right, folks, and we are back. Well, we only have a little bit of time left with you for this week's episode, so some LGBT news to throw out at you. Incidentally, if you are in the Cleveland area and you have an interest in doing radio and you have an interest in talking about LGBT news, well, then hit me up. Send me an email at ken@theshowisogay.com because I'm definitely looking for a new co-host or a rotating cast of co-hosts to do the news week in and week out. I like talking to other people more than I like doing it by myself. Most people do. That's my thing. So out in California, the California Supreme Court, they did deny a request to stop the same-sex marriages that were then approved. But now they've said that they will hear arguments about whether the U.S. Supreme Court decision invalidating Proposition 8 applies only to the couples named in the federal lawsuit. It's just more folks spending time and money, let's be clear, they're spending money as well, those legal costs mount, to take away rights that have been given, that have been lawfully given. And you just have to wonder about the psychology and the commitment of folks who so ardently and fervently want these rights to go away once given. We've said it, you know, a lot. It's one thing if your state doesn't grant, say, marriage recognition or any type of rights for LGBT citizens, and you are saying we want the status quo to persist. It's a whole nother ball of wax for those rights to have been given and for you to actively fight to take them away, to spend your time, to spend your money, and say the most important thing is that we take away these rights. It's just remarkable. Although there's a great quote here from Vikram Amar, who is a law professor at the University of California at Davis. He said, quote, "Like a chicken with its head cut off, Proposition 8 is trying to act alive, even though it has no real chance of being revived." So that's what's going on out in California. Our condolences, just our huge, huge condolences to the family of Carlos Vigil. 17-year-old Carlos Vigil posted a note to Twitter before he decided to take his own life. He was a gay New Mexico teen. He reportedly committed suicide after being subjected to intense bullying from his classmates. And so you can read all about that. Just another tragic story. I'm reading this great book right now called Oddly Normal, and it's about two straight parents. It's a nonfiction book, and I'll try to get them on the show, but about two straight parents whose young son tries to kill himself, and they actually realize that he's gay seemingly before he does. And it's just all about their journey, their process to get him to come to terms with his own sexual orientation. They are amazingly supportive allies and supportive parents. And I'm only about halfway through, and it's quite riveting, but there's a whole section in there about LGBT youth suicide and bringing attention to that, and whether or not there was really an uptick and a rash of LGBT suicides, or if there was a rash and uptick in media coverage of LGBT suicides, but the bottom line being whether or not that was an actual phenomenon, an increase that took place, there is no question that our schools could be safer. There is no question that our teachers and our social workers and our school staff could be trained more. There is no question that parents probably need to do more to, and not just parents of the gay kids to recognize the signs if they're struggling, but parents of kids who are bullying. Parents of kids who are bullying to intervene and know that there is more that they can do to stop their children from bullying, because there's more that they can do to recognize those signs. I think we focused a little bit too much on let's find the signs for the kids who are struggling, but let's also find the signs for the kids who are bullying and intervene there. And our last story that we will keep tabs on comes to us from Maryland. A Maryland lawmaker hopes to be elected the nation's first openly gay governor. Delegate Heather Mizier plans to make her campaign announcement this week for the Maryland 2014 governor's race. She's been exploring the run for months. She would also become Maryland's first female governor if elected, although women have run in the past. She said, quote, "It's a sign of how far we've come as a state that an openly gay person can be a serious candidate for governor, but the fact that we're still talking about it is a sign that we have a ways to go." And I've been watching YouTube clips on her and her stances, and I rather enjoy her. So we will, of course, reach out to her, too, to see if we can get her on the show. And that about wraps it up for this week's episode. Our huge thanks, of course, to Noah Michelson from the Huffington Post Gay Voices section. What a treat to talk with him. And, of course, Geeks Out and their campaign, which you can find on Facebook, Skip Ender's Game. If you have an opinion about it, write to them, because I'm sure they would love to hear it and share that with others, because the more attention they can get for that, the better. If you have any guest ideas, you should, of course, send them over to me, ken@thisshowisogay.com. We have our relationship expert, Dr. Frankie, coming up on next week's episode, so we will be answering your questions that you have submitted, which you can stroll on over to thisshowisogay.com, and right there on the homepage, you can submit your questions. And on next week's episode, the band A Great Big World, who I am obsessed with. We played their music a few weeks ago. So excited to speak with them. So a lot going on. Get out there, folks. Go do whatever it is that you do best to raise up the voices of your LGBT and ally brothers and sisters, whether you are submitting a blog for the Huffington Post or organizing an action about a movie that you don't want to get more money than it should because of the guy who wrote the book on which the movie is based, and he's pretty anti-gay. I mean, seriously, look up how anti-gay Orson Scott Card is. It really is remarkable. Whatever it is that you do, get out there, folks, and do it. And while you're doing it, please remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?
I think it's time. I think it's time. For a little Memphis soul girl. Just son, and when his daddy would visit, he'd come along. When they gathered around and started talking, that's when Billy would take me walking. Out through the backyard, we'd go walking. Then he'd look into my eyes. And Lord knows, to my surprise, the only boy who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher man. Only boy who could ever teach me was the son of a preacher man. He was, yes, he was. No matter how hard I tried, when he started sweet talking to me, come and tell me everything is alright. Kiss and tell me everything is alright. Gotta get away again tonight. The only boy who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher man. Only boy who could ever teach me was the son of a preacher man.